It was a zombie jamboree. Took place in the New York cemetery. It was a
Hello and welcome back to another nom 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 episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. My name is Kip Costa.
I'm Romano Da Silva.
Walter Vinci.
What we'd like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you'd like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. In this episode, we'll be talking about Brad Pitt's latest film, World War Z. But before we get into that, it is time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I will go first. I have some things to talk about. I'll try to be quick. First one, Pitch Perfect. It was on HBO this past weekend. Stars Anna Kendrick and Brittany Snow and Rebel Wilson. Directed by Jason Moore, who I don't know what else he has done. But Anna Kendrick is completely miscast as a freshman at a college who is kind of forced, into a singing group. And I mean, really, the only purpose for this movie is to showcase, the remix singing bits, yeah. A la Glee, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like I said, Anna Kendrick completely miscast in this role. She is way too old to be 18 years old, to play an 18-year-old. And
oh, geez, that's what, she's supposed to be playing 18?
Well, a freshman, yeah, in college.
That's what you're saying.
And she is supposed to be like this alt type of girl who isn't into that whole stupid singing thing, but she likes to remix her own music and wants to be a DJ and all that kind of stuff. It's really lame plot. Some of the singing performances are pretty interesting, but this terrible ADR throughout the whole thing. You know, you can tell that it's you know, post recording and it's just. I can see the market for this, you know, and I can understand why people would enjoy this film. Not for me, not for you guys. I would give it a meh. A movie that I would not give a meh is a movie from 1981 starring John Travolta and Nancy Allen, directed by Brian De Palma, and that is Blowout. This movie is awesome. I highly recommend it. I think you both would really enjoy this movie. John Travolta plays a movie sound recordist who accidentally records the evidence that proves that a car accident was actually a murder, and he finds himself in danger afterwards. It's perfect De Palma. This is like De Palma at his best. If you didn't know the director, you'd be watching this film, you're like, this is Brian De Palma. And John Travolta does a really good job as this guy is just in way over his head as he's discovering, you know, the clues and all that stuff. Nancy Allen, kind of annoying, you know. Lover of RoboCop, really annoying I guess she kind of plays like a hooker or a call girl of some sort. Anyways, John Lithgow is in this movie, and he plays an awesome bad guy. Dennis Franz is in this movie, and the guy has not changed a bit at all, ever. I think he was born the way he looks.
But what about his ass?
No, thank you. This is a great thriller. The part where where Travolta is recording he's out in like a park on a bridge recording sound, just ambient sound, and he's just using like an ambient mic to pick up the sound of wind and rain and animals and stuff like that, and that scene is really well done. It's really edited cool and typical De Palma touches. This is a great thriller. I would definitely recommend it to both of you. I think you'd really enjoy it. That is a yay. Next, a movie that came out last year starring Steve Carell and Keira Knightley, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. This is a bit of an odd duck of a movie. I don't think it really knows what it wants to be. IMDb says, as an asteroid nears Earth, a man finds himself alone after his wife leaves in a panic. He decides to take a road trip and reunite with his high school sweetheart. And he's accompanied by a neighbor who inadvertently puts him puts a wrench in his plans. You know, it's somewhat of a comedy, it's somewhat of a tearjerker, somewhat of a rom-com, somewhat of a serious, you know, like, thesis of what people would do in that circumstance when there's only, like, a month to live before this asteroid, you know, destroys the Earth. So you see some people just going about their daily lives. Steve Carell plays this like middle management insurance agent who just, you know, is completely despondent, hates where his life has taken him. And you know, he goes to a friend's party, like end of the world party, I guess. And his friend is played by Rob Corddry, and that was it's a really funny scene in which these people just succumb to all sorts of debauchery. But there's one standout scene in here in which he and Keira Knightley, on their road trip, they come across like a TGI Fridays type of restaurant, and when they enter, it's like a scene from Caligula. You know, where these people have completely given in to all their base needs and are completely out of like. They've seen this as an opportunity to just, you know, go balls to the wall, bonkers, and it is pretty funny. It's really funny, but overall the tone of this movie is so odd because you're like, it's so dark at times and then it's kind of sweet at times, and the ending is really it's just kind of leaves you like, whoa, you know, what was that? So I think I would give that a meh. And two season finales I want to talk about. The show I've talked about in the past that I really enjoy, and that's Mad Men. You know, it completed its sixth season. And I think when the sixth season had started a few months ago, I had talked about, because I had actually finished the fifth season at that point. It just got on Netflix. So I watched this complete season of Mad Men on TV live for the first time. So it was really odd watching with commercials. But I would like to go and revisit it and marathon it like I had done the previous five seasons, because I think I'm going to pick up a lot more. My reaction, though, to this season is that it's a lot darker than the fifth season. I really, really like the fifth season because of how... And I know you guys haven't seen it, but the people who are listening who have seen it will know what I'm talking about. Is that the fifth season, you actually kind of saw a light at the end of the tunnel for Don Draper, especially with the introduction of his new wife, Megan, who is a much better character than his ex-wife, Peggy. And thankfully, Peggy is not featured that much in this season, and it's all about Megan Draper, and her arc in this show is great, and so is Don's. I think the whole series in general is just fantastic, and once again, people have listened a long time, as I have done before, I'm going to recommend it again. That's a yay. And finally, the season finale to HBO show Veep. Probably the best comedy on TV right now. Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays the vice president, and it is she plays it wonderfully. The whole cast is just tremendous. People will recognize what's his face. He played Buster Bluth in Arrested Development. He plays her assistant in this, and he's just great. The whole cast is great. It's so fucking funny. It's great that it's on HBO because there are no holds barred. It's just so it's so funny. And I have to say that the season finale was probably the funniest episode of the thing where there's debate as to whether or not the president is actually going to run for re-election. And her assistants are wondering if they should seek another job. Because if he does run, that means she's going to be out as vice president, so they have to find new jobs. But then there's back and forth as to whether or not that's going to happen. And if the president doesn't run again, that means she's going to run for president in 2 years. So then they're going to be like, oh no, we're on board. We're still on board. You know? So all the confusion and whatnot that fell out from that is just great. Of course, I would give Veep a strong yay. Walter.
All right, I finally got a chance to see Behind the Candelabra.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed this movie.
Yes.
I don't think that Michael Douglas disappears as Liberace. The whole time I'm watching, I can see Michael Douglas. Like, I don't see... I don't know if this is a more of a makeup thing or if this is a performance thing, but I could clearly see Michael Douglas as the most prominent character, like, the most prominent actor in this whole thing. Everybody else kind of blends into their role pretty well, except in my eyes for him. Like, I'm like, this is just Michael Douglas.
Matt Damon, like, though, is pretty good.
Matt Damon is fantastic. Rob Lowe is awesome in this. I was also enjoying, you know, seeing Dan Aykroyd and Scott Bakula also in this movie, too. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool to see, you know, to see these guys. And it's a solid movie all the way through. I mean, I enjoyed it. I was, you know, had my interest from the very beginning to the very end. And if you haven't seen it yet, I will give this a yay. I think most people at this time probably have seen it. I'm a little late to the party because of my work schedule. And, it's not on demand, so certainly worth checking out. So that's a yay for Behind the Candelabra. And then continuing my quest toward Pacific Rim, I watched two more mech series. The first is Sakura Wars. It takes place in 1920s Japan with the Imperial Flower Brigade. It's a group of young women who pilot these giant mechs to fight monsters that try to attack Tokyo. I love the way this whole anime looks. The story is pretty clunky. It feels rushed in certain places. But the mech design for this is pretty awesome. It takes place in the 1920s, and the mechs look like they belong in the 20s. They have these giant, like, diesel engines on the back with, like, big smokestacks. The girls are, like, inside these, like, small little, you know, cockpits. And basically, it's like they're just kind of wearing, like, a big metal suit. And for them to be able to see, they have, like, these, like, little, like, kind of, like, Dalekian eye stalks that kind of, like, there's, like, a groove for them so they can, like, look left, but it's only, like, monocular vision. Mm-hmm. And they fight monsters. They save Tokyo. I love it. I think it's pretty awesome. It's kind of retro. They kind of keep the 1920s feel, you know, of Japan.
Was it based off of a TV series?
It's based off... It's a combination anime and video game.
Oh, okay.
So there's actually the games that came out all supplement that story as well. So you can follow what's... I think maybe that's why it feels hurried and rushed in some places. And in some places, it feels like it's more developed. And I think that's probably because you probably would want to play the games along with seeing the show. But this is a yay if you're, you know, for your anime fans out there. It's certainly a yay. And a more modern mech to watch, The Big O.
Yeah.
This is a two part. Technically, it's a two part series that ran on Cartoon Network. The DVDs came out in two parts as Big O and Big O 2.
Which I own.
So do I. They're not really bookends. It's basically, it's like half the series and then you got the other half of the series. Mm-hmm. There is a city that no one remembers anything from the past. I think it was like 7 years. And there's these weird clues that are all over. There's like a giant hole in the clock tower and like no one knows how it got there.
Save the clock tower. Save the clock tower. Sorry.
Then you've got Roger Smith, the negotiator. If you need something done, you call Roger Smith. And when the city is in trouble, Roger Smith calls on someone else. The mega deuce known as Big O. Some of the sound design in this is actually really cool, because like when Big O walks, it makes this like boink sound when it takes a step. And it probably has the coolest, like, you know, like Voltron has its blazing sword, and other mechs have like their big, you know, final attack. Big O's is a giant punch. He pulls back on the controller and he pushes a button and a giant piston comes out of the back forearm of the robot, and when he punches, he pushes a button and the piston rams forward and blows whatever in front of it is away. As the series progresses, you see more of Big O's weaponry, including something I wish I would have seen more often in like this series, a weapon called Big Thunder, where like his forearm opens up and just barrels for like a machine gun. And just lets loose. The ending
to the series is...
It's a letdown.
You think so?
Yeah, I was let down. After all that build-up, I felt kind of cheated about the ending.
Yeah.
But as a whole, the series is pretty damn awesome. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give this another yay all the way for the mighty Big O.
Cool. All right, now it is time for Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. I will go first. I will talk about one of the trailers I saw before World War Z, and that is the new Martin Scorsese movie, The Wolf of Wall Street. It's based on a true story of Jordan Belfort, from his rise to a wealthy stockbroker, living the high life, to his fall involving crime, corruption, and the federal government, starring Leonardo DiCaprio. And another person you see in this trailer is a wondrous, wondrous Matthew McConaughey. And it looks like he's just continuing his brilliance from last year.
Yep.
Have both of you seen this trailer?
So I've seen this trailer.
Okay,
yes.
So you guys know what I'm talking about by his performance at the end of this trailer, how it just balls out insane it is, how he gets DiCaprio to start, you know, pounding his chest into the song, right? And he has like this weird overbite, and he has this awesome slick back hair. This looks like, you know, Martin Scorsese bringing like Wall Street into the current day, but also doing a commentary on like the excess of Wall Street. You know, maybe like his own take. I haven't seen these movies, but like The Bling Ring and Spring Breakers, I guess supposedly have been a commentary on like the excess of the youth culture of today and wanting to be to emulate the rich, you know, and the reality famous, if you will. But this looks like it's taking that same aesthetic with a typical Scorsese touch, but in the political and the financial sector, you know. And I just love it out in this trailer. It's just, you know, DiCaprio just throwing money everywhere and just living this excess life that, you know, is just going to come crashing down on him. You know, it's going to be coming out in November, right in the middle of Oscar season. And it's Martin Scorsese. Come on, you know? So, are you not that pumped?
I immediately passed on this.
Really?
When I saw, I was like, I can tell the whole movie just from watching the trailer.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like, if the trailer gives away the, I mean, I can see the ending coming a mile away through the trailer. I'm like, it's going to take some convincing.
I'm willing to give it a chance. I mean, it does look like a slight departure from what, the tone at least looked like a slight departure from something that Martin Scorsese would normally do. Usually does either more serious films or, you know, so I'm tentatively hitching to this.
Yeah, well, I am definitely hitching to this one. I'm pitching to The Wolf of Wall Street. Hermano?
Alright, the trailer I saw was actually a teaser trailer. It was just released a couple days ago. It's for Ridley Scott's new movie, The Counselor. IMDb synopsis is, a lawyer finds himself in over his head when he gets involved in drug trafficking. Now, what has me hitching to this movie is basically the cast. This cast is bananas.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt, Michael Fassbender, Javier Bardem, Cameron Diaz, Penelope Cruz, John Leguizamo, Rosie Perez. I'm like, holy crap, man. Just the main three male actors is insane that they're all in the same movie. But, the teaser doesn't really give you much as far as, you know, anything story-wise. It just kind of shows you some, you know, strung together scenes of maybe some of the action in the movie, and then some of the way the characters are going to look. And Javier Bardem looks insane in this movie. He has another crazy haircut. It's all like spiked up, and he just looks like he's just some coked out dude. Brad Pitt looks like he's some kind of I don't know exactly what Brad Pitt is in the movie, but he's wearing a suit, and he looks like he's telling someone to pretty much, you know, watch your back, you know. So he looks like he's either playing some kind of foil to Michael Fassbender, who looks like he's the lead.
So this is written by Cormac McCarthy. Does he have a book?
No, this is his first original screenplay.
I'm already in.
Wow.
I'm already in.
For those who don't know, he wrote the book No Country for Old Men and also The Road.
Mm-hmm. And All the Pretty Horses.
So, absolutely hitching this. I mean, Ridley Scott is one of my favorite directors. You know, coming off of, Prometheus was his... Yeah, totally hitching. You better be, Tim.
Yeah, so I'm already in, man.
Now, this is coming out in November as well.
October. Still... October 25th.
Oh, does it? All right, I thought,
yeah,
a couple weeks before
Wolf of Wall Street.
Ah, I wish they were going head-to-head. But whatever.
I think the studios are a little smarter than that. Walter?
All right, well, Hamato mentioned a Bananas cast, and My Trailer Hitch also features a Bananas cast of Cuba Gooding Jr., Lady Gaga, Sofia Vergara, Danny Trejo, and Charlie Sheen as the president?
Don't you mean Carlos Estevez?
Exactly. Because I'm talking about Machete Kills. I wasn't too impressed with the first Machete movie.
Really?
Yeah, I don't own it. I have all the other Robert Rodriguez movies that he's come out with, and I have not bought Machete because I don't believe that mediocrity should be rewarded. And I did not like the way Machete was paced or put together. It just seemed like he rushed it. Like, he could have had something really, really cool, and it's basically like, oh, I'll just build this movie around this trailer. I have a feeling this is going to be kind of a redemption for him, because I've seen the Spanish trailer, and I've seen the American trailer. And they're both. This book looks like it's going to go back to, like, his Bananas type of, like, action roots.
Did you say that Mel Gibson is in this movie, too?
He is. I forgot the name. He plays a weird-named villain.
Luther Vaz.
Yeah, Vaz. This movie, I'm hoping that he can redeem himself with after the first Machete.
Edward James Olmos and Damien Bashir too. Jesus. Wow.
So this is going to come out in July around the same time as Pacific Rim.
This is October.
This is October because
it was pushed back. That's right. Yeah. I remember hearing that recently.
So it looks like it's slated to come out in July, shortly around the same time as Pacific Rim, or is it more pushed?
No,
back?
It was pushed back to October.
Pushed back to October. All right. This is the trailer before World War Z had it as July still.
Right.
Didn't change the date.
So yeah. This is going head-to-head against The Counselor?
No, this is coming a week and a half before The Counselor.
This is your challenge movie. Bananas Cast versus Bananas Cast.
Holy crap.
I'm certainly going to go see it. I'm definitely hitching. I love all of Robert Rodriguez's stuff except for that first Machete movie. I'm hoping that he can kind of redeem himself in my eyes because that other Machete movie I did not like. Hmm.
All right, let's get into our discussion of World War Z.
Everybody out of the car. You gotta get off the street.
What is that, Jerry? What is that?
I don't know. Get to the RV.
The plot. United Nations employee Jerry Lane traverses the world in a race against time to stop the zombie pandemic that is toppling armies and governments and threatening to destroy humanity itself. The director, Mark Forster. The actors, Brad Pitt, Muriel Enos, and Daniela Kurtzitz. Hermano.
Yes.
You have read the book, and I believe that you were looking forward to this film.
Yes.
Why don't you kind of explain the differences between the source material and then tell us how you felt about the movie adaptation?
The main difference is that the book is told in a documentary style where you're pretty much following a reporter, and he's interviewing people that were directly affected by World War Z, as they call it in the book. And it could be anybody from key players, such as scientists or military or, you know, political figures, to just normal, average, everyday citizens who, you know, struggled to survive during the epidemic. So that's how the book is told. And the movie is pretty much a straight, you know, narrative where you're just following one person who I believe, unless Wally can correct me, is not even in the book.
He's not in the book.
And you're following him, and it's just one overarching story as opposed to a bunch of different stories. I like about two thirds in this movie. I like the first two thirds. I kind of hated the final act of the movie. I thought compared to everything else that preceded it, the final act was just real let down, and I feel like the movie ends on kind of a whimper because everything before it is on such a grand scale, and he's traveling across the globe to all these different areas and trying to find answers to how this all started and how we can potentially stop it. And then the way the movie ends, it just comes to such a stop, and you're in this one little location, and everything just seems much smaller, even though the stakes are high. because there's not a lot going on. It kind of becomes like a game of hide and seek almost. And it made me really, really long more for the way the book was structured opposed to the way the movie was.
Wally?
Hermano's right about the pacing movie, because you have, like, rapid fire, rapid fire, rapid fire, and then it comes to an incredible slowdown. I didn't mind the ending of the book so much.
The book or the movie?
The movie. It's drastically different from how the book ends. And in my eyes, that this ending made a lot more sense as to, you know, how one would resolve a zombie conflict.
Should also mention that the book takes place after the events.
After the award.
Interviewing people during the war.
It's after the war.
Memoirs. They've already won. So.
Well, they're winning because the last chapter implies that the battle's still going on because they're still making cherry pie rounds and those battle smashers that they describe in the book. But I love the way this movie starts. This movie is,
it doesn't waste any time.
You know, it just wastes no, because that's what would happen. Like, if something like this were to happen, it would just, you would never see it coming. You know what I mean? At first, I mean, they kind of explain it a little bit further on the movie, but like, oh, when you heard reports of this or reports of this, you know, you did this or you did that. Most people would just probably just dismiss, like, those, like, oh, that's just probably just, like, nonsense or whatever. But, you know, 20 minutes into the movie, just all hell breaking loose. It's pretty awesome. I love the pacing of it. I love the lack of answer in this movie. The exception of, what the hell does Brad Pitt do at the UN? They never exactly specifically specify what his job is. Let's say just that he worked for the UN.
Well, they call him the investigator. Like, he investigates. They never actually say exactly what he investigates. But apparently he's an investigator.
He investigates something. But apparently he investigates enough that when people, like, pick up the phone and talk to him, they're like, oh, whatever you need, dude. It does pretty much slow down, and a couple of weird set pieces that I thought probably, I mean, should have been changed in the filming or changed in the writing that would have helped it make a little bit more sense when you have something that's going the way it's going, and I'll mention that in probably spoilers. Overall, I dug this movie. I dug the hell out of it, actually.
Yeah, you know, leading up to this movie, I was really ambivalent towards this, you know, about, you know, all the trailers really... See, that's the thing about this marketing, too. A lot of people talking about this movie have really commended the marketing for this film in order to, attribute to what led to a somewhat surprising weekend gross, you know, being the number one grossing movie of the weekend, like $66 million or something like that.
Oh, I'm off by two of my predictions.
And so...
Well, it wasn't number one. Monsters University was
okay, so it was right up there. Yeah. You know, I think they were neck and neck, you know, very close.
Yeah.
Considering the production trouble, you know, and it had almost maybe over $200 million budget, you know, after all this production trouble and reshoots and stuff like that.
Well, they reshot the entire ending.
Right. So, so it was kind of surprising that it did so well. And I was wondering, well, why did it do so well? Because all the trailers leading up to this were the same fucking trailer. There was never any change in any of the trailers. No, they never showed any different scenes or anything like that. It was always the same exact trailer. And I never understand that. Maybe they don't want to give away too much for certain things towards the latter part of the movie, or maybe they just had a trailer cut while they were reshooting the ending and they didn't have much else to put in any other trailers, any alternate trailers or anything like that. So I was really kind of baffled. And that's what led to my kind of ambivalence towards this movie going in, is because I never saw anything new on the trailers. Not that I go and seek trailers out. But, you know, watching the movie, I was like, yeah, okay, this is pretty decent. I like the big scale moments versus the small moments. I think they do a good job of pacing that throughout the movie, of going from big to small, and to really give you the impact of this on an individual basis. You know, He immediately starts with him and his family stuck in Philadelphia, you know, trying to evade all these mobs of zombies and stuff like that, or infected people, I should say. And so then they get away from that, and then it goes to a small moment where they're in the apartment building with that other family that lets them in to their apartment. And, you know, you get some moments with them, some one-on-one time, and you really, all you hear from the outside, all you get from the outside is the sounds from out there, you know? And then it goes back to a big moment of them escaping and going in the helicopter, and you see what has happened to Philly. And then from there, you know, it continues that kind of pattern. I saw the movie like 4 days ago. Today's Wednesday. I saw it on Saturday. And honestly, I don't remember much. This movie hasn't stuck with me. And I don't think this is a movie that I really needed to see in the theaters, you know? I could have easily waited for HBO or for Netflix or something like that. And I probably would have been perfectly content. I probably would have come away, you know, the same way I felt coming from the theater. I was like, oh, okay, that was all right. You know, there's nothing really that truly stands out except for some plot points that have more to do with the reshoot at the ending, you know, than anything else that I'm like, all right. I don't know. I think Brad Pitt does an okay job. I think he powers his way through this movie as much as he can. There's some, like, okay, the scene where he finds himself in the South Korea, I guess.
At the military base.
At the military base. That, when they're leaving the military base, that scene, that is so poorly edited and poorly shot. And it's hampered, I think, by the PG-13 rating. I think that's what it was, is that they were editing around some of the gory parts that they may have actually filmed, you know? And there's some really bad ADR. Like, you see one character, you know, taking care of himself, if you will, goes completely off screen. And they supposedly have earbuds where they have lookouts, and the lookouts are telling them where to go and what's happening. And all of that is terrible ADR.
Because it's too crystal clear. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't sound like something's coming over like a headset, or someone's talking through like a microphone. It just sounds like someone is standing right next to you, whispering in your ear or something. It's weird.
Yeah, and people explaining what they're doing at the same time, and you know, I don't know. And I guess when they leave, I guess Brad Pitt knows how to fly a big plane, right?
Well, he says he's single prop certified. He needs me to walk me through a turboprop job.
Okay, I'll buy that, I guess.
He says it.
Sure.
I think one of the other major problems of this movie is the PG-13 rating. This movie is probably the most bloodless zombie movie I've ever seen. Like, there are moments where clearly the camera should have focused on something potentially gory, but it never does. It's like the camera's like, nope, can't show you that. Like, there's an instance, one point where Brad Pitt gets a crowbar stuck in a zombie's body, and he's trying to pry it out before another zombie attacks him. And you're just thinking, like, they're gonna show what it's stuck on or something, and any other movie would, like, and they just stay fixed on him, like, trying to yank it out, like, close up on his face, and I'm just like...
Well, although I do think that kind of added some sense of drama to it, because since the camera is stuck in that one shot, you do see the threat coming from behind him the whole time, you know, while he's struggling with that.
I just feel like there was, like, zero blood in this movie.
Right, right.
People get attacked. Well,
there's zero blood in this movie.
Yeah, they pretty much are getting tackled to the ground, and that's it. I do agree with you guys. Like, I did like the opening scene when shit first starts going down. Just the chaos. They did use some shaky cam. In the beginning, they should use some, but the scenes I'm specifically referencing are the ones where you start seeing a huge crowd of people running, and these zombies, we haven't even talked about how they look, but they don't really look like zombies that are all just deteriorating and all bloody.
They're all fresh.
They pretty much just look all fresh, and they just kind of look like their eyes are dead, and, you know, they're just making these clicking sounds like Wally was making. And you just see people running, and at first they're all so jumbled together that Brad Pitt is trying to focus in, like, what the fuck are people running from? And he can't quite tell, like, what the hell's going on, and you just see, like, some people are attacking other people, But it just looks like just people attacking other people.
And so he sees that one guy that gets pulled out of his
that's
car.
That's the thing, because I think they did a good job throughout the whole movie of establishing how he's able to focus amongst chaos, you know? So I understand it's more of an editing technique in order for you to understand what's going on, but also it gave me the sense of him able to focus on things.
The movie almost made it seem like he had like some kind of superpower, like eagle vision or something. Like he was just always like focusing on that one guy amongst hundreds of people. And I don't know, it seemed silly because they did it like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Like he would just always focus on something that's going on. He'd be running, look back, and be like, eagle vision, and just see something going on and be like, that's a clue. I'm going to keep running now.
Yeah, that's one thing I did have a little bit of a confusing point, because like, they never quite show you. In fact, they do a really piss poor job of showing you the solution during the zombie, you know, epidemic. They show you like these three like different scenes where you see like a wino, an old man, and a kid with a cricket bat,
mm-hmm.
and somehow you're supposed to make this like this leap. Like I wouldn't understand how this character would make this leap to figuring out what's going on with
the virus.
I couldn't see it.
Well,
and I don't want to say it until I don't want to talk about it more until we get to spoilers, because
yeah, I think
it does give away part of the movie.
You know, one thing I had talked about last week in Man of Steel was convenience issues, and there's a major convenience issue here in which he arrives in Jerusalem, and it just so happens that he arrives at the same exact time that these people start chanting. And that attracts the zombies to...
Muslim chanting.
That attracts the zombies to crawl all over on top of each other and go to the top of the wall. So, and I'm thinking to myself, they never chanted before he arrived here. They never decided to have a prayer or encouragement chant before this moment.
Or never even mind chanting, just use that speaker system at all.
Right.
Yeah. Like, just to announce things to huge crowds of people. Like, it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
The other thing I didn't really appreciate about the movie is that, like Tim said, they played the same trailer over and over, and I feel like a lot of the bigger action set pieces
are all in that trailer.
I felt like I had seen every single big action set piece already, and by the time they show you the new stuff they didn't show in the trailer, which is like the final act of the movie pretty much, it just didn't hold up to the rest of the stuff that you had seen.
One major thing that is in the trailer is at the end of the trailer is the plane scene in which there's an explosion, you know, in the plane. And I'm thinking to myself, while I'm watching the trailer before I see the movie, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way. There has to be like a dream sequence, you know? And even during that moment in the movie, I'm thinking to myself, this has to be a dream sequence. This can't be real.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, no.
Well, I thought that part of the trailer, I thought that was actually going to be a post-credit bit.
Right.
Because that would make an awesome post-credit bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I actually kind of appreciated this is, like, I typically hate when a zombie movie, in the world of the movie, when they pretend that no one's ever heard the word zombie before.
Yeah.
So, like, zombies do not exist in this movie world. In this movie, the first time you hear someone say zombie to Brad Pitt, he recognizes, like...
It's from a government memo.
Yeah, and he's like, someone said the word zombie. Like, they mentioned zombie, and he's like, what? And he's like, kind of like, what? Like, it's not like, what's a zombie? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
what's a zombie?
Like, no one's ever heard of zombies before. So I appreciated the fact that I didn't try to play stupid, like, you know.
Yeah.
And there were some callbacks to the book. Like, in the book, they call, like, the military type would call zombies Zeeks.
Zeeks, yeah, they call them Zeeks.
And the military in the movie calls them Zeeks at a few points. And
see, I would have liked if they had taken a little bit more of that part of the book out and put it into the movie, where in the book they describe using conventional weapons on the Z's, and they don't work because they don't breathe,
mm-hmm.
they don't have heartbeats. So, like, they're talking about using, like, you know, things like Hellfire missiles, which, you know, like a thermobaric weapon, which, you know, blows out heat and then uses the air pressure to feed, like, the blast wave. So it forces the air out of your lungs, and then when it dissipates, it forces the air back. If your lungs don't burst from the inside out from the air pressure on the outside, they collapse on themselves from the air pressure on the inside when the vacuum is created. And it doesn't work because these things just will keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish, and when you see the A-10s, I was hoping that they were going to kind of go that way and be like, oh, it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
But they immediately cut away from it.
I really, at the end of watching this movie, I really just was like, why did they think that this is better than the structure of the book. I thought the book was solid. I mean, it does suffer from that thing that we, like we've mentioned before, like it's sort of like an anthology, like where like you're hearing all these different, you know, tales and stories of people, and not all of them are as good as others, but there were a lot of solid stories told in the book.
So you're saying that the movie would have been better structured if they should, like, it was constant flashbacks to the scenes that they're talking about?
Yeah, like, maybe interview someone and maybe flashback to, like, maybe narrate their story. Like, they could just...
Because you know. I would have loved to have seen that story in the book of the people having dinner.
Yes.
And the zombie...
Yeah.
The zombies show up at dinner. It is probably the scariest part of that entire book.
I love, like, the twist, too. Like, in the book, there's a twist where this guy is tasked to... Pretty much the rich have all holed up in this, like, these, like, their mansions and stuff like that. And there's this one guy who's pretty much, like, a bodyguard for the rich. And there's, like, a twist to that story. And it's a great twist because I just didn't see it coming. And then there's other smaller stories with, like, a female jet pilot.
Yep.
And there's even really small ones where, like, there's a character... I actually listened to the book, the audiobook. And there's a character voiced by Alan Alda. And basically his character's just talking about how, like, he started up a little small community and they're planting trees and they're trying to do all the little things. Like, they're recycling. And it's just a small story. Like, the book has small stories like that all the way to, like, the stories from the perspective of, like, the military and what they had to deal with. And then it even follows this one family with, like, a small girl.
Yep.
And what they had to do with as far as, like... trying to find food and things like that. And I just thought all those stories were much more interesting than what was going on here.
Yeah, all that does sound... Yeah, I haven't read the book, and all that sounds more interesting than what... and more memorable than what was presented in this movie, because I honestly, I don't remember much of this movie except for a lot of the major scenes, you know? And that's one of the things about good summer blockbuster movies, is that even if it's a big spectacle, you're going to remember those small moments if it sticks with you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's not many of the small moments that stick with me. I remember enjoying the small moments while I was watching it, mm-hmm. but, you know, thinking back on it, I really can't remember much. And I don't know, although one small moment is when he's in South Korea and the prisoner, you know? David Morse. Didn't even fucking recognize, man, because he has no teeth, I guess.
Yep, all his teeth have been removed.
And that story he tells about the North Koreans,
yep.
And I'm like, man, that is a really cool story, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like a variation of the Russian story from World War Z, where they talk about decimation.
Yeah, and there were some key moments that I thought were pretty good. Like, I feel like the movie started off on the right foot. Like, there were... like moments like when there's a point, I don't think this is a spoiler, when Brad Pitt thinks he might be infected.
Oh, that is great. Yeah.
That was great. That was a strong scene, but I felt like there weren't too many scenes like that that seemed powerful. Like, this guy was willing to do something to avoid, you know, something happening.
Well, obviously it's mirrored again later when one of the Israeli soldiers, mm-hmm. you know, is injured.
Which I think she could have been cut out of the movie and it wouldn't have changed.
Really? I enjoyed her character. I thought she was...
She brought nothing to the movie for me.
She started off strong and then she just kind of became a side character.
That's true.
And then I think, to me, and this is only because I'm a dad now, and Mia felt the same way, she got emotional during this scene. There's a scene in during the supermarket when you see a bunch of people just scrambling to grab as much food as they can. And there's a scene where, like, Brad Pitt's wife gets assaulted and he has to shoot someone. And all of a sudden you see a cop show up and he's just like, shit, I'm caught. And you see this cop just not even care that this just went down. And what does he run to?
Formula and baby food.
He gets formula and baby food. And Mia right away was just like, holy shit. Like, that was, to me, that was one of the strongest scenes. And of course, it's because of my situation. My current place in life, I should say, not my situation. Sounds wrong. But I really gravitated to that scene. And I'm just like, holy crap. Can you imagine, like, all this going down and all you can think of, you're not even thinking about yourself. All you're doing is grabbing all the baby food you can and all the formula and stuff like that. So I wish there was more powerful scenes like that just really struck a nerve, because I didn't think there were too many. And also, I just felt like nothing ever felt like very weighty. Like for instance, I don't think this is a spoiler either. There's a point where they meet up with a Hispanic family.
Yeah, yeah, right, like, beginning of the movie.
And what happens to them?
Yeah,
there's no emotion there.
Right.
Like, I couldn't believe that scene played out the way it did. Should we talk about it?
It just happens too fast.
They don't have enough screen time to actually develop any sort of like
connection.
I'm talking more about the reaction of the kid.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, his parents were just killed, and he has like no emotion. Like he's just like,
oh, I'm with this dude now. This is my new family.
All right, cool. You're my new family. I'm gonna hang out with you guys now. I'm like, really? Like,
hello, new parents.
I mean, just maybe a little, make the kid cry or something, he acts like nothing happened, and even Brad Pitt, he just kind of like, hey man, later on he's like, hey man, you're awesome, watch my daughters for me, like, really, you're not going to like be like, dude, I'm sorry about your dad, I tried to get him to come with us, like, nothing, like, I'm just like, damn man, they're not really going for the emotional, like, human stories, they're more about, like, they're just more... wanted to just find the cure, and that's all they cared about, and I just didn't feel like that was maybe the right choice.
I think one of the biggest negatives of this movie is the music and the score. I mean, I swear to God, there's nothing original in this score. I've heard it in something else before. I've heard it in Inception. I've heard it... I don't even know what else, though, because there were other moments, like, during this, like, more character-driven moments, or even just other bigger moments that I was like... I kept thinking to myself, man, I've heard this someplace else. I've heard it. It seems so unoriginal to me.
I don't even remember the score. Yeah. It's completely forgettable.
The music either. I did have a cool geeky moment, though, when they go to Cardiff. He's going to the WHO research facility in Cardiff, Wales.
Yep.
That's also where they filmed Doctor Who, by the way. Just throwing that one out there.
They filmed there, too, yeah.
So I was like, oh, look, it's WHO in Cardiff again. Oh, interesting.
There was something that I thought was sort of... Maybe, I don't know if they did this on purpose, maybe like a little iconography for like zombie movies in general, and also for the game Left 4 Dead, when they're at that World Health Organization building, and they grab weapons.
Yep.
They grab pretty much the
same weapons.
The same weapons you can get in Left 4 Dead.
Left 4 Dead.
A crowbar, an axe, and a baseball bat. And I'm like, why would you guys have a baseball bat in this facility right now?
So the composer, his name is Marco Beltrami, and he has 89 titles to his name.
Wow.
And all of this stuff I can totally see being taken, he took from, because, I mean, there's plenty of movies like the Scream franchise he did. He did The Crow Salvation and Dracula 2000, Joyride, you know, Resident Evil, and Terminator 3 and Hellboy and iRobot, and I'm thinking of all this stuff, and I'm like, I can definitely see him taken from these movies.
I can
see that. I don't think there was anything original in the score itself. I mean, Jonah Hex,
Gun. Come on, Tim.
Is there anything else you guys want to mention before spoilers?
Let's go into spoilers.
Anything in particular?
Yeah, there's two things in this section that, like, all right. First, the plane crash on its way to Wales.
Jesus,
that should have killed everybody on board. All right, they should have either taken that entire scene out or done it differently, where it wasn't a grenade. Maybe he blew open opened up the emergency hatch somehow.
Or at least show like the pilot making an awesome like solid landing,
But not like he hits the trees, the fucking wings fly off, the cockpit is ripped to pieces. I'm like, this is the end of the movie. This is it, because no one should be living. And then you see Brad Pitt just hanging by his belt. I'm like, how?
And this is the moment where you know that, oh, this is where the rewrite happened.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got like the woman character, the Israeli soldier there, who's handless, who is completely unscathed. Holding on with what? You've got one good hand.
Yeah.
Talk about convenience, though. They're within walking distance of this place.
You see Cardiff, and then like right in the background, oh, there's a research facility.
And then as bad as Brad Pitt was injured there, like he had something poking out from his stomach all the way through his back, and I'm just like, I don't know. Like sometimes like stuff like that just kind of, I'm just like really aware that this is too convenient.
But then he gets there, and they're all like, they're super hostile to him. Like, who are you? Who are you? I'm like, he's obviously not infected.
Yeah,
he's
not. Yeah, I didn't understand why they were so...
He's been out for 3 days. He would have come to by now and been like, no.
You think they would have loved any kind of contact with the outside world. Sort of
like, what's going on or what's happening?
Yeah.
I also don't like how they show Brad Pitt coming to the conclusion of the sick being the camouflage. Because you only see the wino, you see the old man, and you see the kid. And... of those three, only two of them have anything in common, and that's the old man and the wino, because they're both They're both old.
Well, the kid obviously looked like he was sickly of some sort of...
He didn't look sickly to me. He was just like a skinny kid with a cricket bat.
But also, you know that Brad Pitt's character is with the UN, and he's been all over the world seeing all this type of stuff.
I couldn't make that jump. I was like, how would you figure
this
out?
Of all the things, that was the least concerning to me.
How would you figure this out?
I can sort of buy it, because if he's looking at those three people, I'm like, what do these three people have in common? And I think he could deduce the fact that they must have had the old man, obviously. I mean, he's not long for the world.
Yeah.
I mean, the wino probably has liver cancer. Yeah,
He's just sitting there drinking, watching all this, this shit happen in front of him. They need to show me something.
He's
a little
not
bit more.
The picture of health, and neither is the old man. And the kid was obviously had some kind of disease because he was very malnourished. He looked really skinny, and he was bald too. So
yeah, but I mean,
he might have had alopecia.
I mean, until I started growing my hair back. I mean,
he wasn't like he didn't
pretty much
have
that
like
same kind of bald.
He didn't have like a shaved head. He was completely hairless, and he was really frail looking.
So yeah,
he goes to swing at the guys, and he has no strength. I mean, and plus he was using his eagle vision,
super eagle vision.
And as for the ending, you know where. The whole, like you said, it turned into a game of cat and mouse.
Yeah.
You didn't care for that much?
No, it just really... I mean, compared to the rest of the movie where he's jet-setting across the world and the stakes just seem like crazy and he's constantly running and moving and there's always a threat. The threat was there, but it all of a sudden it turned into a slow zombie movie. Where everyone's just kind of... He's just kind of got to walk slowly.
Well, it's because there's
by.
A reason for that. Because
no, there's a perfectly sane reason, but I just felt like it got too slow. Like, all of a sudden... I know the stakes were high, he's got to try this, and this is, he's here now, and he may be the last hope for trying to figure this out, but I just felt like the movie just slowed down really to a halt.
It does screech to a halt at that point, because, the movie ends with, Brad Pitt casually drinking a soda, and then turning on the soda machine so that it drops all the cans, and then just like that, I was waiting to hear, the... as, the zombies, run past me, he's holding his arm full of of death.
Yeah, but that whole tacked on ending with him arriving on the shoreline to his family is just awful. Terrible.
It was so the movie went out on such a whimper compared to the way it started. It started, and I was like, this could be actually pretty good. It got right into it. Didn't, like you guys said, didn't waste any time. 5 minutes in, he's already in downtown, getting attacked and.
Well, considering the original ending, which supposedly they shot a lot of...
Yeah, they see a snippet of it at the end, the second Battle of Stalingrad.
Yeah, in Moscow, or Stalingrad, but I read, about the ending and how the plane was originally intended for Moscow, and how when they disembark, they kill all, the elderly people, and they put all the other healthy people into to the forces of the fighting force, you know? And he's there for years. He's there for 5 years, in part of this fighting force. And, there's a scene where he's developed that weapon you were talking about.
The smasher.
And he's developed a camaraderie with his crew, and they have this big battle that's featured.
So he's Casper Van Dien.
Yeah. And then finally, they get away from that somehow, and he comes and they have come in contact with the outside world, and he's able to contact his wife finally, who supposedly had in order to help her children, had been using herself really with Matthew Fox's character, who was completely cut out of this movie, save for the very beginning, for about 5 seconds, and he was a soldier that was using her for his own pleasure,
Wait, Matthew Fox was in this movie?
Yes.
When?
He was one of the soldiers on the helicopter when they rescued him. When they rescued the family.
Did he have, a helmet on or something?
Yes.
I didn't even notice him.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was
in this
movie.
Was completely cut out of this movie, and he was supposed to reappear at the end of this movie. And it was supposed to end with Brad Pitt and a few other people arriving on the shores of California. And his family is in Florida. And it was supposed to end, on a D-Day invasion type of thing, setting up a sequel for them traveling across America to get his family back. So And I, you know, you can read this ending online, the full description, you know, much better than I did. And it just seemed like a much darker ending and a bleaker ending, and also sequel baiting to me, you know. And there's already talk about a sequel, anyways, which it doesn't make any sense considering the ending of this movie.
I mean, I love the concept of this ending, that there's no like grand battle. And there's no, we found the cure. Basically, it's like, we bought ourselves some time. Like, we still don't know how this is all going to turn out, but we've got at least a little bit of breathing room to try to figure this, There's no, it's not tied up in a bow other than the fact that he gets to come back to Wales or Nova Scotia and find his family. But, the ending, I thought, was, like, pretty good for like a zombie movie. Like there isn't a cure. There is no grand battle. Like you might not even see that in like an actual zombie apocalypse.
That is fine to me. Well, it's just the voiceover that kind of bothered me too, because there was really no voiceover. There was no voiceover at all throughout the whole movie. And then you tack on this ending with this lame Brad Pitt voiceover telling you what's happening. And I'm like, I think I might have rather have seen it just completely through news footage. You know?
Yeah. And just, I don't know, just like I said before, like nothing felt weighty. Like I had no doubt in my mind that he was not going to die at all. Like and he was just going to be they went for the happy ending pretty much, even though like Wally said, like the zombie war has not been resolved technically. They've just kind of bought themselves, like you said, like breathing room. Like they can kind of move about and not have to worry about like having to dodge these things at every turn.
It actually kind of reminded me of Shaun of the Dead, you know, at the end
I love the end of Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just kind of left the theater and I had it graded in my mind right away, and it hasn't even changed.
Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to mention?
No, that's pretty much. I mean,
okay. So, well, we asked for some Twitter feedback on this, and we got some responses. George Bell at Call Me Sir Phobos.
Sir Phobos.
CGI zombie sucks, but the characters make up for them. Pretty enjoyable, I'd say.
Knight of Mars, beater of ass.
I didn't mind the swarming zombies. I thought that was one of the more unique things about the movie, but I felt like every scene with the zombie swarm you had seen already.
Yeah, they swarm like an organ, like a living organism, like a giant amoeba.
I mean, they even go to show you in the beginning in one of the like quick cuts, you see a bunch of ants just crawling everywhere. I mean, it's kind of not really subtle.
Yeah. Dalton Weaver at Dalton_Weaver. First two acts are good and feel like they're building to something epic, but it fizzles out. Script's weak, but Pitt saves it.
I don't know, man. Pitt, I felt like he had the same expression on his face throughout the entire movie. Like, you never felt like he had any emotion other than, I just got to get this done.
Yeah, he always did feel kind of cool and calm under the pressure. He never felt like he was sweating, you know?
You can attribute that to his job. They do say, oh, you've seen some shit through your career or whatever, but I just felt like he was just always kind of like, I need some answers. I need to find out what's going on. It was just that whole...
Who, what, just, where?
Yeah, he just had that same attitude throughout the entire movie. There was no... I don't know.
Natalie, at Voodoo Doll Girl, some good zombie action but cliche ending. Glad the kids weren't featured throughout. That would have been tedious. Two-word movie review, at two-word movie review, Z movie.
I guess kind of... Wow, they're using our rating scale?
No, I think it means kind of like...
only two words to review the movie.
No, like kind of like... Z for zombie. Sleepy, you know, kind of boring or something. Justin at JDubs12, it was the worst piece of crap I've ever seen. Started off promising, ended horribly. I wish I got bitten.
Wow, man, I don't know. I could say it's the worst movie I've ever seen, but
you guys want to get into grades?
Sure.
Wally?
See, I'm vacillating.
You said her Wally again.
I said, Wally. Mm.
See, I've been vacillating between two grades since this entire time. So I did have a good time watching this movie. I'm gonna give it an A-.
You're fucking kidding.
I'm not kidding you.
There's nothing
fun with this movie.
Look, there's nothing that you said in your review that warranted an A- to me. Is it so weird that you would give it an A-?
I had a lot of fun with it. It has some cool concepts, some cool zombies.
You were like, during your whole review, you were saying like it was very. It seemed like it was pretty average to you. You know, nothing great, nothing too bad, just good. You know,
this may also be clouded by the amount of suck that I've had between the last time I actually liked a movie.
I love how Tim always reviews Wally's reviews, like his grades.
Yeah, we've gotten to that point.
we should actually do that on Twitter, like as like Tim reviews Walter's review.
You stick with your A-?
I'm just saying my A-, because I mean I walked out of it with a big smile on my face when I left the theater. I was like, that was a fuck ton of fun. I will actually go see it again if any of my other friends who haven't seen it yet want to go see it.
Well, Hermano?
I'm going to bring the average down a little bit. I had this grade in my mind as soon as I left the theater, C+.
Yeah, B minus. So A minus, C plus, B minus sounds like a B average. I mean, well, A minus it would be and a C plus would be a B. So I minus a B minus, so I guess it's a B minus average.
Yeah.
Then, right?
Sure.
Okay. That does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
And please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. We love feedback.
Yeah, we love it.
Even if it's negative, please just send it, submit it, because we will take it as constructive criticism.
Exactly. I mean, we love talking with our fans, people who listen to the show. Absolutely. It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Drop a big deuce on us if you must.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And speaking of suggestions, stay tuned for our next episode. It is a user-suggested movie we'll be talking about that is Pink Floyd, The Wall, which I believe is available on YouTube in its entirety.
It's available on YouTube in its entirety.
You can get it on Netflix disc, but it's not on YouTube.
I don't think it's in HD on YouTube, but, I mean, it's free, it's on YouTube. Yeah, you can watch it. It's still perfectly fine, the clarity of the movie and all that. And that is the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch.
Nom 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 nom. Ramona, something I've been meaning to ask you, I keep forgetting to ask you, is horror movies are like your favorite genre, pretty much, right? One of your favorite genres.
One of my favorite.
Okay. But if you don't get scared at all during a horror movie, even the scariest movie, then what do you go to see a horror movie for?
I just like to see the different takes on just the horror genre. I think can go in a lot of different directions. Like, every movie can have little bits of a horror element, but I go mostly because I just like the creativity and like kills sometimes. I think that I'm talking good horror movies now. I'm not talking like the Friday the 13th remakes. No, I'm not talking any of that stuff. Like, I like just looking at the trailer for Your Next, I got really excited. I'm like, wow, that looks like something that I would like. That is, I don't know, it's just something about horror movies.
Okay, so I can see with that there's like the creative angle of how the people are trapped and how they get killed and how they get taken out one by one.
Yeah.
What about the true like jump scare movies, like the Paranormal Activities, or you see the trailers for The Conjuring?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I
can't wait for this movie to come out.
This movie
I
is
can't wait.
Terrifying me.
I can't wait.
Just by the trailers alone. But
the trailer played before World War Z, and it's weird. Like, people in the theater were laughing because they thought it was laughable, the stuff that was going on in the movie. And I was watching it, and I was like, this is awesome. This reminds me of something, like I told you earlier, like The Orphanage.
Yeah.
Like, The Orphanage had an element where there was like a kid's game twist to something that happens in the movie. And this looks like it has something similar. And I don't know, I just like when horror movies are good and they try to build mythologies and stuff that kind of sort of could make sense, you know what I mean, in the world of the movie. I just like a lot of the creative takes on movies. Like, I'm not big into the slasher stuff, like the Freddy. I appreciate those movies, but they're just not what I like. I like, I know it's crazy, but the Paranormal Activity stuff, I love that it was made on the cheap. It's like all these different things combined. Like, it's low budget. They were really creative, and look at where the movie started and where it is now. Like, the first movie was made for like 70.
Well, it's not in a great spot now. After the fourth one,
you could argue that, but I don't know. I just love the horror genre. I think it goes back too to when I was a kid. My dad wasn't squeamish about letting me watch them, so I've grown up watching nothing but like the craziest horror movies when I was a kid. And I guess it just carried over to now, and I just love it.
Do you ever find yourself getting scared at all in any horror movie?
No.
No?
No.
What do you think it would take for a horror movie to truly scare you at any point?
I don't know. I don't fall for jump scares. It's Hollywood has a very set formula, especially the studio horror movies like The Conjuring. I have a feeling it's going to have a very set formula where, like, for instance, when Lily Taylor is in the stairs with her back to the door,
the camera is zooming in on her.
Right.
So you know nothing's going to, like...
There's either empty frame on the left or the right, yeah, or there's a super close-up.
Yeah, so you can tell, like, she's taken up the entire left side of the screen. Obviously, something's going to come from right in the dark spot right there.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's so obvious. And plus, you know, zooming in, obviously they want you to focus in. You know, she has her back to the door, which it's unexpected that something would come from behind her because her back's to the door. But, of course, they're hoping that you think that there's no way anything could come from behind her. And, of course, something does. So it's just Hollywood uses a lot of the same tricks. Or it'll just go completely silent and then, boom, loud noise. You know, like, I haven't seen anyone do anything new. I honestly, like, in 30 years as far as jump scare movies where, like, you know... They got me, like, oh my god, like, I didn't see that coming, or, you know what I mean? Like,
but you're still looking forward to the concert.
Yes, like I love the first Saw movie, because I did not predict that.
Right.
That twist ending, and I was like, wow, that blew me away. Like, I was like, I never even considered that, you know, they tell you something in the beginning of the movie, and you just accept it, you're like, yeah, it looks like that's what happened, and then by the end of the movie, it's like, no, that's not what happened. So, I don't know, man, it's hard to put it into words, like, why I love horror movies so much. I grew up with them as a kid. I think that's probably why I'm so desensitized now to, like, scares and stuff like that, because I saw, like, Faces of Death when I was, like, 10. So it's like, you know, things like nowadays, I think movies are just not as scary either, like, as they used to be. Like, even though The Conjuring does look crazy scary, it doesn't blow my mind as far as, like, you know, something I had never seen before. But it's just a trailer, so we'll see where the movie goes.
Yeah, the movie can be like, oh my god!